Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care. Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
Midnight has passed, and in the stillness of these hours, the hauntings are never silent. This is Real Ghost Stories Online, After Midnight.
It always begins small, almost laughably small, the kind of details you could shrug off if you wanted to. A sound in the night, a dog that stares too long at a corner, a closet light that shouldn't be on. But anyone who has lived with this kind of thing will tell you, the small things are never small. They're openings, cracks in the surface where something else, something you didn't invite, slips in. That's what happened to her. She was always what her mother called sensitive. Sensitive to things most people would dismiss. As a child, she didn't even realize she was different. She would giggle alone in her room, carrying on conversations with someone unseen. Her mother would pause outside the door and hear her laughing, whispering, answering back to silence. She doesn't remember much of that now. At 24, the details blur. Childhood is hazy that way. But her mother insists it happened, and over time that word, sensitive, stuck. Even as a child, she hated walking through the dark. Not because she was scared of it the way kids are scared after a scary movie, but because her body knew there was something in it. The pit would drop in her stomach. Her skin would turn clammy as though she'd broken into a cold sweat. The hair on the back of her neck rose like a warning system, and always the feeling of being followed. She still feels it even now. 3 or 4 times a week, enough that she never lets herself get caught in the dark without some kind of light. She's not afraid of the dark. Not exactly. She's afraid of what the dark brings alive. For years, it was just that, a feeling. A shadow at her back, a sense of pursuit. Until one night, when she was 19, the feeling turned into something she could no longer deny. She was sleeping at her parents' house, tucked into her bed, when she woke with the distinct sensation of someone touching her face. A finger grazing her skin. She rolled over, blinking herself awake, and froze. There, perched at the edge of her mattress near her face, was something. Black, round, the size of a basketball. At first, she thought maybe it was just her eyes adjusting. Some trick of the dark. But before she could reach for a light, the thing jumped hard. So hard it shoved the bed into the headboard, knocking items onto the floor. She screamed, bolted upright, her voice dragging her parents down the hall. They stormed in, lights on, demanding to know what had happened. But of course, by then, the thing was gone. Only the mess on the floor remained. Her father called it a nightmare, just a dream. But she knew better. Nightmares don't slam furniture. Nightmares don't leave headboards rattling. That was the first direct encounter. The nightmares followed, not always vivid, not always memorable, but relentless. She'd wake drenched in sweat, heart racing, chest tight. Sometimes she cried without knowing why. These episodes only came a few times a month at first, but they carved themselves into her life like notches. Still, she managed. Until Elk Grove. She moved into her own place in July. A one-bedroom apartment, quiet, unremarkable. The kind of building where people nod politely but keep their doors shut. She wanted independence. She wanted peace. What she got instead was escalation. Like most of us, she used her phone as her alarm. She left it on the nightstand beside her bed, just an arm's reach away. But every morning, when the alarm went off, when she rolled over to silence it, something happened. A scream, not from the phone, not from the street, a scream in her ear, raw, guttural, the kind of scream that curdles your blood before your mind even processes it. It happened every time. The moment she reached for the phone, the scream ripped through her ear and sent her bolting upright, leaping across the room for the light switch. After a handful of those mornings, she adapted. She began sleeping with the phone on the bed beside her, so she wouldn't have to reach. As long as it never sat on the nightstand, the scream stayed silent. But by then she knew, whatever this was, it wasn't random. It was deliberate. It was watching. It knew her routines, and it had decided to play. For months, the pattern continued. Bad dreams, cold sweats, small anomalies that gnawed at her nerves. Then in March, things shifted again. A friend needed a place to live, so she upgraded. Moved into a two-bedroom unit, invited someone else into her space. On paper, that should have helped. A roommate meant company, meant witnesses, maybe even meant safety. But that's not how it worked, because the thing in the apartment wasn't just watching her anymore. It wanted to be seen. The new apartment was brighter, bigger, cleaner. Two bedrooms, one for her, one for her friend. A small balcony that looked over the parking lot. Neutral walls, beige carpet. The kind of place designed to be forgettable. But the moment they settled in, something shifted. Her roommate had a dog. A sweet animal, medium size, the kind that wanted to curl up on your lap no matter how little space there was. She loved that dog, but soon it became the most unsettling witness in the house. The first time she noticed, she was brushing her teeth before bed. The dog padded into her room, tail low, ears back. It walked to one corner, the same corner every time, and stared up at the ceiling, growled, a low, deliberate rumble that vibrated against the floorboards, that it wasn't a one-off. Night after night, the dog repeated the ritual, living room, bedroom, hallway, it didn't matter. Its focus was consistent, precise. That one corner, that one empty patch of ceiling, you can dismiss your own fears. You can call yourself dramatic, exhausted, paranoid. But when an animal reacts, an animal with senses sharper than yours, instincts older than memory, you have to pay attention. Her own body confirmed what the dog already knew. The nightmares grew worse. She woke shivering, covered in cold sweat. Sometimes she woke crying, her chest aching, as though grief had been poured into her veins while she slept. She had no memory of what she'd dreamed, only the residue. And then there were the marks. Every couple of weeks, new scratches appeared on her skin. Thin, delicate, like someone had dragged a fingernail across her body with just enough pressure to bruise. Never deep enough to draw blood, never raw enough to sting. Just visible enough to remind her she wasn't alone. The most recent set was on her shoulder. Two lines, about 2 inches long, perfectly parallel. She stared at them in the mirror, fingers brushing across the faint purple streaks, trying to reason it out. She hadn't bumped into anything. She hadn't worn jewelry. There was no logical explanation, but logic doesn't erase bruises. The apartment itself began to misbehave. One afternoon, she came home and found the closet light glowing. She hadn't opened the door, hadn't touched the switch. She shrugged it off. Maybe she had forgotten, until she stepped into the bathroom. The last time she'd used the tub, she'd taken a bubble bath, left the faucet set to fill the basin. Now, without anyone touching it, the diverter had been flipped to shower. Two small details, easy to ignore, except stacked on top of bruises and dog growls and nightmares, they became undeniable. And then came the bed. It was late. She'd stretched herself too thin. Work, stress, all the little battles of her 20s. She wanted sleep, needed sleep. She lay down, forced her eyes closed, told herself it would be fine. And then the mattress moved. At first, it was subtle, a tremor like the smallest aftershock of an earthquake, but then it grew stronger. The whole bed shook, hard enough to knock her sideways, hard enough to make the frame groan. She bolted upright, heart slamming against her ribs, and sprinted to the door. It was closed, On the other side, the dog waited, growling, nose pressed to the wood, snorting like it was trying to sniff its way through. When she opened the door, it barked once, sharp, protective. Then it planted itself between her and the room as if to say, "Don't go back in there." That night she didn't. She slept on the couch, the dog curled at her feet, ears twitching, eyes on the hallway. The next day she told her roommate what had happened, the shaking bed, the growling dog. Her roommate went pale. While she had been out of town, the roommate said she'd been alone in the apartment working on her computer. She heard a noise in the hall, a rattling, knocking, like someone was jiggling a doorknob, trying to force it open. And she stood up, stepped into the hallway, and saw nothing. No one. But under her bedroom door, she saw light. The problem was, she wasn't home. She had taken her keys, locked her door, left no light on. But from under that door, a bright strip of illumination cut across the carpet. She didn't open it. She couldn't bring herself to. She went back into her room, shut her own door, and waited. When she finished the story, the silence between them was worse than anything either had described, because now it wasn't just her imagination. It wasn't just her body reacting. Someone else had seen it, heard it, been frightened by it. And from that day forward, her roommate wouldn't go near her room. The dog refused to enter it, and she too avoided it, sleeping on the couch instead, her skin crawling every time she glanced down the hall at the closed door. That's when the realization began to creep in. This wasn't just a haunted room. This wasn't just an apartment with bad energy. This was personal. At first, she tried to reason it out. Ghosts, she told herself, were supposed to be tied to places. That's what she had always read, always heard. They haunted old houses and cemeteries, battlefields and hospitals. They lingered where something terrible had happened, where trauma left an imprint. But the longer she lived with it, the less that explanation fits. Because this wasn't the first time she'd felt pursued. She'd carried that dread since childhood. The pit in her stomach when she walked through dark hallways. The sense of someone trailing her just out of sight. The black orb on the bed at 19. The scream in her ear every morning in Elk Grove. What if it wasn't the places? What if it was her? The thought cut deeper than any bruise. Because if a house is haunted, you can leave. You can pack your things, close the door, find a new place to live. But if you are haunted, if something has latched onto you, there is no escape. That's when the fear started to evolve. It wasn't just about shaking beds and closet lights. It wasn't even about the bruises that appeared without warning. It was about her, who she was becoming, how she was changing under the weight of it. She stopped sleeping in her own bed. At first, she told herself it was temporary. Just until things calmed down, just until she felt stronger. But days turned into weeks, and the couch became her new home. The dog stationed itself like a guard in front of her, always between her and the hallway. Her roommate shut her door at night and refused to step foot into the other room. Imagine that. An entire bedroom sealed off, treated like a quarantine zone. A space in your own home that you no longer feel belongs to you. That's the real theft of hauntings like these, not the spectacle, not the scratches. It's the quiet loss of normal life, the erosion of comfort, the way you stop walking freely through your own space. She tried to push back. She tried speaking out loud, telling whatever it was to stop. Sometimes she said hello, testing the air like she was introducing herself to a stranger. Other times she shouted, demanded that it leave her alone. And sometimes she swore it worked. The atmosphere would lift. The house would feel lighter, but it never lasted. And in the back of her mind, the worst realization lingered. She might actually miss it if it left for good. That's the cruel paradox of an attachment haunting. Terror and familiarity knot together until you can't tell them apart. The thing that shakes your bed is the same thing that fills the silence of your nights. The presence that scratches your skin is also the one that convinces you you're not alone. And if it has been with you since childhood, if it has crossed cities and years to stay by your side, then what does that say about you? About about the bond you never asked for but now can't untangle? She wondered often if she was losing her mind, if the bruises were stress, if the bed tremors were her own body twitching, if the scream in her ear was some bizarre trick of half-sleep. It would be easier if that were true. Because madness, at least, is yours. It belongs to you. You can medicate it, treat it, learn to live with it. But when your roommate hears the knocks too, when she sees light under a door that shouldn't be lit, when the dog growls at empty corners, there is no refuge in insanity. The evidence leaks into other lives. That was the part she couldn't shake, that whatever this thing was, it wanted to be known. It wasn't content to lurk in her shadows. It rattled the walls. It lit the rooms. It stared the dog down until its growls turned into barks. It demanded witnesses. And witnesses are harder to dismiss. She read what she could, trying to find answers. Stories about poltergeists, spirits, demons. Some say attachments are born from trauma, that something latches onto you in a vulnerable moment and refuses to let go. Others say they're parasites, feeding on your fear, thriving in the adrenaline they create. She thought about her childhood again. The laughter her mother heard through closed doors, the invisible playmates she can't remember. Had it started then? Had something seen her openness, her sensitivity, and decided she was the perfect host? Or was it more recent? The orb that leapt from her bed at 19. The scream in Elk Grove. Did she invite it then without meaning to, simply by noticing? The truth is, she doesn't know, and maybe she never will. What she does know is that the haunting has changed her. Nights are no longer safe. Sleep is no longer simple. The room that should be her sanctuary is forbidden ground, and the worst part isn't even the terror. The worst part is the waiting. Because when you live like this, you start to count time in intervals between incidents. How long since the last bruise? How many nights since the bed shook? How many mornings since the scream? You wait always for the next thing. And the waiting itself becomes the haunting. She sits on the couch tonight, the dog curled at her feet, her roommate asleep behind a locked door. The hallway stretches out in front of her, ending in the door to the room she can no longer enter. And she knows, with the certainty of someone who has lived too long with the impossible, that something is waiting on the other side. Not tied to the walls, not trapped in the beams and drywall, tied to her. That's the part she can't escape. Because if it has followed her this far, across homes, across years, what will stop it from following her forever? And so the question isn't whether she should move again. It isn't whether she should call a priest or burn sage or beg for help. The question is darker. What happens when the thing that haunts you doesn't want your house? What happens when it wants you?
Want more real ghost stories? Then press subscribe now so you don't miss any of the multiple new ghost stories we drop for you every day. Only here at Real Ghost Stories Online.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
Mr. Monopoly here. Monopoly is back at McDonald's. Register in the McDonald's app so you're ready to
get your bag.
Two ways to peel for a chance to
get your bag.
Physical peels with select items and digital peels with others to
get your bag.
Play Monopoly at McDonald's.
Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.
No purchase necessary. See rules at playatmcd.com for full details and amoe.playatmcd.com to play without purchase. Ends November 23rd, but bonus play ends November 2nd. Monopoly is a registered trademark of Hasbro. Copyright McDonald's.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.